Good Saturday morning, St. Louis. Hey, you are tuned into the Home Improvement Show right here on KMOX. It's me, Rich Orris, lively and ready to talk all things home maintenance and remodeling with you for the next couple of hours here. We've got a lot of show for you. The phone lines, they're wide open for you, 314-436-7900. So give me a call with your questions, big or small. Whether it's a repair you've been putting off or a renovation you're dreaming about, I'm here to help you think through all that. And hey, we finally got a dose of some snowy St. Louis weather out there this morning. The roads are slick. The cold, it's biting down on you. And this is exactly the kind of day when your home really kind of shows you what it may need. Maybe that draft around your windows is feeling a little stronger today. Maybe your furnace is working harder, working overtime for you. Or maybe you woke up to an icy surprise on the front porch steps. No matter what's happening, whether this winter weather is revealing about your home, whatever it is, we can talk about it today. What I would recommend, stay inside. Do not go anywhere. Grab yourself a nice hot cup of coffee, settle in, and let's get your house ready to take this season on. See what we can do. Again, this is the Home Improvement Show on KMOX, and we are ready for your calls today. Again, the number to join me is 314-436-7900. And, you know, that take that advice seriously, folks. I drove downtown to get in here to help out, to provide this service for you. And it was not a great drive, and it took like almost three times the normal time that it would take to get down here. Driving about 40 miles an hour or so average on Highway 64. So there's a lot going on. It was sleeting. Stay indoors. Keep yourself safe. If you don't need to go anywhere, if it's not absolutely necessary, just stay in. And again, you can give us a call. Let's talk about your home. 314-436-7900. And a lot going on with the snow, the weather today, everything coming into this new season. It's right after Thanksgiving here, so I'm also curious how everybody survived what the industry, the plumbing industry, calls Brown Friday. It's apparently the busiest day of the year for Roto-Rooter and companies like that. With Thanksgiving and everything you're cooking and going on, a lot of backups, a lot going on with the plumbing. So curious how everybody got through and survived that this year. And looking at my doors, I've been talking about weekly, kind of putting those doors in. What's happening there? Well, boy, this morning I kind of went around them, and the way we got those watertight also makes them airtight. Using a great low expansion foam insulation around that frame really seals that temperature up. And I've got all the trim up around the inside of all the doors that I've put in. Still got to fill some nail holes, paint, got the finishing touches to do. I got all new doorknobs. Still got to put all those on. So all new lock sets for all my doors. And so I still got to get through all that, but feeling around those doors, I'm going to tell you, it is much, much different than the way it was before, and how it comforts the house, having all that new put in well, put in the right way. And last week I was kind of talking about it and didn't really get around to a full explanation of, on the outside, taking off the siding around a door. When you have just an entry door, it's got the brick mold around it. It's good to put the flashing tape around that opening and get it prepared and get flashing tape on the bottom sill before you put that door in. But once the door was in, I double dose that for protection and take that siding off. And when I wrap the outside of that door with metal, I wrap that around one piece around that brick mold onto the wall, nail it, and then flash tape it to the wall. So you can imagine on a cold morning like this morning, this is exactly what this is for. The wet, the snow, the rain, and the cold with the air trying to infiltrate in. It's a much different environment on the inside of those doors. So, hey, we've got David on the line. Let's jump over to David and see what's going on there. Hey, David, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, yes, thanks, sir, for calling. What's going on?
I'm headed to Europe to see my kids and my granddaughters. And I've got a question that can I turn off my water because I don't want to spring a leak and flood the place. And will that affect my, like, water heater or, you know, the plumbing system?
So you can turn your water off if you're going to be gone for quite a while. It is a great idea to do that. Just shut it off to the whole house. And the way it will affect that plumbing system is when you're back and you get everything running again, if any air gets in the lines, then you might get some hammering in the pipes or you might, when you start to run faucets and that, you might get kind of the air spitting and the water spitting and air coming out when you start to run it again. If everything stays the way it is and nothing absolutely changes, but those water levels can kind of change a little bit. If you have a toilet that's maybe just slowly dripping and it comes to where it tries to fill that tank up again, because you could have something like that happening and not really even know for quite a while, that's when it'll try to run and that's when it'll use some of the water and then the air will start to get in the lines because it's not refilling. But that's really right. The biggest thing is, and that's okay to do that. And you know, you can... There's ways to kind of get that air back out of that line later if it were to happen. But if you're going to be gone a while and not having someone in the house quite a bit, then yeah, I would definitely recommend turning that off. Because if you have a washer hose with pressure in it or anything like that just bust, then, yep, it's going to run and cause a pretty big catastrophe.
Quick follow-up question, if I might.
Yeah.
I have a vacation setting on the water heater, so I would turn that to that. And also, should I open up the faucets and let that, you know, drain, or do you recommend just not doing that?
I mean, I would probably just not do that and just see if when you come back, you turn it back on and see if it got any air in it or whatever. I mean, you can do that. You can open it up and get some of that pressure out of there. But if something did break, it would stop. It wouldn't be a lot of water and it would stop relatively quickly. Cause I
got
it's
you.
Not going to run. So you're fine not necessarily opening them up.
Okay. Hey, I really appreciate it because I've been wondering about that and I'm happy that you answered that for me. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. No problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, David. We can get into more topics on that and more things you can do a little bit later, too, when you're leaving like that or things that you might not want to do when you're heading out of town
for quite a while.
So, yep, you're welcome. Appreciate it. And for everybody else, hey, we're going to jump into our first break, but we're here for you. What do you need? What are you doing? 314-436-7900. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. All right, we are back. More home improvement show for you right now. Got plenty going on. Got plenty of time for everybody. You can find me again right here, right now. 314-436-7900. What is happening with you after Thanksgiving with your home? Do you have a new honey-do list because of Thanksgiving? Things that you figured out, found out, any of that? Well, give me a shout and we'll help you see what we could do to help. And one topic talking to David about going out of town, about turning your water off. If you're going to be gone a long time, it is a great thing to do for sure. Make sure if you have somebody coming in and out of your house, they know that, so they're not trying to use the faucet or anything like that if they're checking in and all that. But speaking about, so when we were also talking about setting the water heater at that vacation setting, that's great because it'll keep it warm, but it won't heat it up as if you need it to take a shower and wash dishes and all that. So the same thing, think about with your thermostat, with the temperature of the house when you leave and it is winter and you're not going to be in there for a while. I would be a little bit careful how low you go with that thermostat. The things you'll find that it says is somewhere between like 55 to 60 degrees is a good safe place to keep pipes from freezing and to keep just like hardwood from cupping and drywall cracking and all that going on. But I might recommend maybe just keeping it up a little bit more than that. It's okay to go down, but I mean, I would think more like 65 or something, just, and especially if you're like David, you're going to Europe, maybe you're going to be gone for a while. I actually had a house I looked at this summer that they went out of the country for like a month, and when they came back, they had a bunch of mold on their vaulted ceilings inside the house in the living room. They had it a lot in a bathroom powder room area, and it was quite a bit. And they were very surprised. And I asked them, I said, "Well, if you were gone for like 30 days, did you change the temperature in the home to save energy while you were away?" And at first I was just with one of the owners and they were like, "No, we really just left everything the same." And I was kind of explaining how that could affect it. But then his wife came home and he said, "Hey hon, when we left you didn't change the thermostat, did you?" And she said, "Oh yeah, no, I did. I raised it to like, you know, 80 or whatever." And I was like, "Oh, okay. See," and the key was that you might even read that's okay, and it can be, but the time they were gone was right in the heat of summer where we had like 40 days, 30-something 40 days of triple-digit temperatures during the day in a row for like all of those days. If you remember, it was as hot as it could possibly be. So now you've raised the house temperature up, and it's way hotter outside, so your insulation's only going to hold so much of that temperature out. So you're getting this heat coming in. Your attic's probably 150 degrees. Your air conditioner isn't running as often as it would if you were home and you had it at 72 or 70 or 69 or something to battle that heat to try and keep a good temperature. So the more as that AC runs, it's removing the humidity out of the air. Well, it wasn't doing that as much. And they come home to all this mold in these areas. And it's all the areas in the kind of the cracks and the seams in these vaulted ceiling areas where the insulation in the attic is probably at its thinnest, where it's lapping over the wood and running down the sides. And so, yeah, I firmly believe that they probably have this happening all the time. It's just when they turn that heat up, they turn the air up and got it warmer and they left and the AC didn't run as much and you had more humidity in the summer and you had all this heat in a row, that's the condition that isn't normally happening. Now, another thing you could do in the summer and the winter too, to try and help some of that is if you have ceiling fans, and I'd maybe advise this to David also, change that temperature down some or whatever. Well, put just turn your ceiling fans on low and just let them run. Let them move air. Let them circulate air. That'll help get the warm air down from the ceiling area. And so that can kind of help the situation also. So this client with the mold getting on everything, and we kind of came to the determination that there's a lot you could do to the home work-wise, scientifically. We could do some things to try and ventilate the attic better and try and make this situation better. But if the first time you really have something like this happen is under this extenuating circumstance that's not normal while you were gone for 30 days, then we just kind of brought theirs to, you really just need a good cleaning and a really good paint job and don't do that again. It's kind of, you know, if your garbage disposal clogs because you put too much in a bunch of noodles and all this stuff from Thanksgiving down there, and you're like, oh my God. And the answer actually sometimes come to, well, don't do that again. That's kind of the same thing, is leave the air running more. But I just advise them. They had like two or three ceiling fans up high in these vaulted areas that I said I would turn them on low. And the only time I would ever change that is if I wanted it higher because I was doing something in the room. I said, but if it were mine, I would turn that ceiling fan on low and never shut it off and just let it run just constantly year round. It will just help move air and just keep things better, healthier, and working better in the home in general overall. So just a great thing to consider is keeping that air moving. I would say 60 to 65. I wouldn't do 55 to 60. I would say 60, 65. Put that temperature at if you're gone in the winter. And then other things you can consider is opening the cabinet doors to all of the sinks to make sure they get airflow in them. You can open those faucets just a little bit to make sure that if something did start freezing or anything happened, it would have room to let the water expand into some of the airspace. Since your water's off and you open that faucet, it'll create a little airspace for some of that. So that's a great thing to do. And hopefully by now everybody's shut off their exterior hose bibs and have them all off and hoses disconnected and shut off from the inside. If you have a shut off on the inside there, your humidifier, now is the time to make sure that's on, make sure it's running. Again, I would tell everybody, don't rely on that humidifier. If it says 35% or 45% or some of those numbers that you see on there, you set that at 45, that does not mean your house is going to be at 45% humidity because you put that there. It's how your house is working everywhere overall on each floor. So again, I'd recommend a digital hygrometer on every floor of the house. So you set that humidifier to 45 and then see what happens on each floor of the house. What is the humidity truly? You'll notice it's different on each floor, and you might need to go up or down to get it into a good zone on the main level of your house, and then everything can kind of balance out around it. So, hey, keep that stuff safe, and definitely make sure you've done all these checklist items when you're leaving town for a long time so that you don't have any catastrophes or anything happening while you are gone. We're going to take our middle first hour break here. But again, you can find me right here. Don't hesitate to call in 314-436-7900. Love to help you out. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more home improvement after this. All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show here. And you're listening right here on KMOX. I'm your host, Rich Orris, and I am taking your calls right here, right now at 314-436-7900. And today I wanted to dig into something that sounds sort of simple, but it's one of the questions I get every time we get a decent snowfall in St. Louis. And people ask me, they say, Rich, I'm not leaving the house all weekend. Why should I bother shoveling my driveway? The sun will melt it. I'll deal with it on Monday. Nobody's really using the driveway. What's the point in doing this? And I get it because, you know, shoveling is not the most thrilling way to spend your Saturday morning. I did mine this morning before I left, just to make sure. And I also, once you drive over it, it makes it way harder to shovel those areas where the weight of the car kind of pushed all that snow and compacted it, especially when it's really cold. But there's more to this than a lot of people realize. So let me walk you through it, because one of the main reasons here is you want to shovel because of the what we call that freeze-thaw cycle in St. Louis. It's very signature for the St. Louis area. If you've lived here long enough, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It snows, it's 30 degrees, then it's 45 degrees, then at night it's 18 degrees, then it's 50 degrees, then it's 30 degrees again. And your concrete doesn't know if it's supposed to be how it handles that, what it's supposed to do. That it's not an ice rink. So you need to watch, because what happens is when it heats up, the snow melts a little during the day. But if it doesn't all go away, that water is running down underneath the snow as it's melting, and it's going down into the cracks of your driveway, and it's filling up the pores in the concrete. So by nightfall, it freezes again, and it expands. It expands and it widens every flaw in that driveway. So this cycle happens in St. Louis about 40 or 50 times a season. So you really have to watch that, because this is what will create those spalling kind of pitting marks where a chunk of concrete will break out, the surface flaking, pitting, some call it, and it can make the small cracks bigger cracks. It can, when you have a small crack and then all of a sudden you see it kind of widening at the top, this is exactly why that happens, is leaving that snow and the ice and the freezing overnight and then thawing and refreezing is just putting stress on everything. And the snow, it becomes ice, and the ice becomes a long-term resident there. So when you leave the snow on the driveway, it compacts, it freezes, it can get a solid sheet of ice underneath it, and now it's bonded to the concrete, so there's more in it. So trying to get it off is even more difficult. So then now what happens is Monday comes and you're trying to do this to go to work, and it makes it even harder if it stayed cold the whole time and it's back to freezing and the snow didn't go away. Another good reason is liability. Even if you're not going anywhere, delivery people, mail carriers, utility workers, neighbors, kids running across, just having not having a bunch of snow there for them, you can be responsible because it's your property. So that's another reason to think about shoveling, even if you're not going anywhere. And then what I was talking about, like driving over it, preventing the compaction, even foot traffic turns snow into ice. When it compacts, it just turns to ice and makes it harder, makes it worse to try and get off and getting inside the concrete and everything. So, and then some say curb appeal, home security might be another good reason to have that done. It definitely looks better and it shows people that you're taking care of things and you're thinking about that. But in the end, it can definitely just protect your driveway's lifespan. It can make it last longer. This is also why we talk so much during the spring and summer and early fall about caulking all the driveway joints, the cracks, all the expansion and control joints. having that keep the water out, sealing that driveway, keeping water out of those pores, keeping the water on the surface of the concrete and running off, it just helps protect that driveway and the longevity and the lifespan of that driveway. And the best way to test that too, if you have sealed your driveway, is just literally dump some water on it and see if it's still beating up. If you dump water on your driveway and it just kind of soaks in and goes right in and there's no beating up whatsoever, it is definitely time to seal that driveway again. That will also help with the salts that you're getting from the road, from the streets, that the MoDOT and everybody's putting out, so you can use the best snow melts possible yourself to protect your driveway, your pets, your vegetation around the driveway. You can get all the best stuff in the world, but you're driving like I drove in. I'm going to drive back, and there's going to be a ton of salt and all of that that I'm picking up, and I'm just driving up onto my driveway and into my garage. So another good reason to seal that driveway and try and protect it and keep that longevity. And of course, it's just good exercise, good routine, and good habit to shovel the snow. It's good exercise. I know nobody's really putting it on a fitness brochure or anything, but it will definitely, you'll feel it in your core the next morning. It is a great workout, so it is good for you if you do that, and just your health and everything. And so that's probably another good reason to go ahead and do that and just keep it from preventing the bigger issues and taking all those proactive steps. So there you have it. If you're not setting foot on your driveway for a couple of days, but clearing the snow off is one of the best things you can do to protect your driveway, your concrete, your wallet, and possibly even your neighbors or your neighbor's kids running around outside. That's good for everybody. So, but hey, right now, remember, we got the phone lines are wide open. So if you got a question about winter prep, snow removal, anything going on around your house, drafts, remodeling, whatever you've got going on in your home, give me a call right now. We've got phone lines wide open. We're going to take a quick break. 314-436-7900 is where you're going to find me, and we'll be right back right after this. All right, we are back. We are back, and oh boy, what a cold winter weather day here in St. Louis we have upon us. We're talking snow now. We were talking a lot about the drive-in and giving that advice out there. I'm sure the newscasters are saying the same thing. Don't go anywhere unless you absolutely have to. It's just not great. We were covering the reasons to shovel your driveway or your concrete, even if you're not going to be using it. There's some really good reasons to go ahead and make sure that you have that shoveled, and we went over that, and we can touch on ice melt, the application, what's the best way to put the best type of ice melt down, and we can go over the different types of ice melt out there, starting with the typical rock salt and moving on from there. There's a lot of different ones out there. So depending on if you have a lot of vegetation, gardening near your driveway where you're putting this, and or if you have pets, there's some good snow melts out there for you, and safer for your pets too. So we will get into a little more of that here in a minute, but we've got Bob on the line, so let's jump in and see how we can help Bob. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, morning, Rich.
All right, good morning.
I got a question about, I'm doing a basement finishing project, And, you know, I've got some extra insulation left, and there's nothing on the band board, you know, between the floor joists.
Uh-huh.
It's a 1985 home, and, you know, cedar exterior with some brick veneer. I was thinking about just going ahead and cutting that up into some squares and just filling in those spaces. But it's craft face. Does it matter if I use the craft face on the inside and just staple it between there, between the floor joists, or should I take it off and then put the suspended ceiling, you know, the drop ceiling on after?
Yeah, so there is a lot to think about in that circumstance, because you definitely want that band board to be insulated. And if you're using that same insulation that went in the walls, yeah, I would stand that up. Typically how they do it is you stand it up on its side. So you could do a pretty long run if it's coming from a roll, because you just put it sideways. Yeah. And I would put that paper facing out and in towards the room and push that up against the band board. Leave it light and fluffy. So you don't want to really cram it up too tight against that band board. You just want it to basically touch it and keep that full thickness. But the thing to think about when you're finishing the basement also is air infiltration around there, because when you put that basement ceiling in, you're going to kind of trap air between the drop ceiling, the drywall, whatever you're using for your ceiling, and between there and between the plywood subfloor from the first floor above it. And so we see a lot of condensation occurring, and sometimes even enough condensation with some kind of mold occurring at times in between that cavity, the subfloor, and that new drop ceiling. And generally what happens is you get air infiltrating in from underneath that band board, the wood sill plate that's down up, you know, against the concrete, and then the vertical band board sitting on top of it. You get a lot of air infiltration there. You've got AC lines that are poking through. You've got a lot of spots where air infiltrates through there. So since you have this extra insulation, what I'd recommend doing is buying a few cans of that spray foam and going around, and you can follow, just kind of spray like a bead of caulk almost along the bottom of that sill plate between the concrete and the wood. You can spray it again from the top of the sill plate to the band board, and then go to any penetration, whether it's wires, whether it's a phone line, a cable line, the AC line, and spray around the inside of all those penetrations around that pipe to close that off. What you're trying to do is keep the air outside and from infiltrating in, because the air will blow right through that fiberglass insulation and still get into the area. So in the summer, when it's hot and air infiltrates, and you've got all this cold ductwork in between that cavity with a ceiling underneath it, that's when you create more condensation.
Okay.
And same thing in the winter. You got hot air running through these metal pipes, the pipes heating up, and then you've got the cold air infiltrating in. It creates condensation, and you'll see these water marks around these areas. You think you have a leak, but it's really condensation occurring. Now, the only other thing that you can do is you can consider just using spray foam insulation, where they spray that whole band board with the foam, and you spray it all the way down corner to corner, all four sides where you're finishing, and it sprays from the top of the concrete up to the subfloor, and that blocks 100% of air infiltration, and it'll have a better R value, and it'll block more air infiltration. It'll condition that space much, much better if you spray foam the whole thing. But in using your leftover, if you go around and you hit all those areas, you should be pretty good.
All right. I got this question too, because I've got three sides of concrete foundation, and then it's a walkout, so the the back wall is it's all cedar and, you know, studs, and it's insulated already. It already had a, I guess it's a 7/8 inch you know, fireboard over it, the top of it. And so, you know, but my concern then is, you know, so I would just follow the same process on that wall as well, you know, that the band board and such.
Yep, I would. You know,
the floor joists are exposed, of course, you know, I mean, and since I plan on putting in the drop ceiling, I thought, well, hey, well, I got this extra stuff here, it might be a good idea to go ahead and just do that, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely. It'd be a great idea. And do the same thing at the top of that sill plate. Even though it's to a 2x4 wall, there can still be space.
Okay.
So do that band board to the 2x top, that sill plate and everything. Go ahead and put that spray foam along the bottom there, even if it's between each floor joist, and that'll help stop a lot of air infiltration.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you answered my question perfectly. So that's what I had for you, and I appreciate your show, and I appreciate listening to you every week.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate the question and the call. And yeah, for everybody out there, this is something that we see very often with finished basements where, you know, air infiltrates through if your house doesn't have any protection from the outside, like a house wrap, keeping that air from coming in, kind of like I was talking about my doors sealed taping. And, you know, you go through all these extremes, and when you keep 100% of water out, you're keeping 100% of air out. And air is the biggest thing. And the other question that I get a real lot is about mold around those band boards, because people look at the insulation when they do have it there and they go, oh, look, that red or that pink insulation is really dirty looking. It's got like black stuff all over it. And they're like, is that mold growing? And I'm like, no, that's not mold growing. That's air infiltrating and just filtering through into the space, and it's just picking up all the dirt. It's filtering the air, so it's working like a furnace filter. When that furnace filter is dirty, you change it. So same thing with your insulations. Block that air infiltration, and you'll be way better off. But, hey, we got to get into our main hour break here. Rick, if you could hold the line through the break, the newscast, we will take your call as soon as we return.